Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Thank you, Russ. Good evening, everyone. This is Wendell Buckner with Lifelines with Wendell Buckner. Our coaching session for today is going to involve coaching on conflict with my guest for today, Ms. Barry Wells. And I wanted to start off just talking a little bit about conflict overall. Everyone has disagreements, and those are just inevitable. But it's the way that we handle them that makes all the difference. Some people choose silence or avoidance or even anger. And those things just push people away and never really fix the issue. Folks, you can choose how you respond during times of conflict. That's going to be the premise of our show today. And I'd like to introduce to everyone Ms. Barry Wells with Turning Point Solutions. Say hello to everyone.
Oh, hello. Good evening, everyone. I'm delighted to have an opportunity to share with you over the next several minutes, hopefully some ideas and concepts and tools that will help you to better resolve conflict, whether it be at work, at home, or at play.
And I know you have the skills to do that. Tell everyone about Turning Point Solutions and how they can get in touch with you at the onset.
Sure. Well, Turning Point Solutions is my entrepreneurial effort. I started the company back in 1991. Seems like such a long time ago. And since then, I've been providing primarily training and coaching, both domestically and abroad. And for those who'd like to follow up or get in touch with me, they can visit my website, which is www.turningpointsolutions.net. So that's turningpointsolutions.net, or Barry Wells, BerryWells at turningpointsolutions.net.
Excellent. Well, that's great. So as we get started today, wanted to talk about conflict resolution and wanted to find out specifically, as you deal with conflict resolution in the workplace, how does that experience for you differ from commonplace disagreements that we might have just among, you know, family members or people on the street? What do you see in workplace conflict that brought you into this business?
Well, I would say that as a professional person who went to school and was groomed to take my place in the corporate world, that I really was not for conflict. And that, not that I had a Pollyanna attitude about it, but, you know, I thought you just went to work and you did your work and we high-fived each other at the end of the day, and that was that. But that was not the case. And through the years, although for the majority of my career I have been self-employed and worked independently, there have been a few occasions where I was internal. And it was as a result of being internal, as well as during my workshops and presentations when participants share different experiences that they've either had experienced or were experiencing, that oftentimes just left me in dismay, you know, almost like, wow, is she telling the truth? You know, and not that people were not telling the truth, but it was just incredulous to me, some of the things that people were recounting that were, you know, happening to them at work. Whether it usually, sometimes with, you know, a supervisor and sometimes with a coworker, and oftentimes it was that communication breakdown, people not having the right tools to help them resolve the conflict. And, you know, it just escalates. And so the idea is that conflict unchecked is unproductive and it's costly. And, you know, we want to be smart with our resources of energy and time and spend our time wisely. So having those tools to both recognize it and do something about it are just essential for any leader.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. You mentioned some of the causes or root causes of conflict as just basic communication, or maybe it's a tools issue in the workplace. But you also talked about the results, the negative results, as it relates to what every business's bottom line is, and that's cost.
Sure.
What do your clients, how do your clients relate to costs as a major factor in getting you involved in their conflict resolution?
Well, actually, that's a good question, but I think a lot of times is that the issue, the conflict, the problem often is not looked at or viewed in terms of productivity lost. And productivity lost can be easily translated into dollars and cents because we know how much, you know, Susie makes a year, and we can divide that out and find out how much Susie makes an hour. And dependent upon, you know, how much time is spent, if it's with another person, you know, that interaction in terms of that direct communication, and then it's the trickle out and trickle down effect, because then, of course, once you've had this conversation, instance, altercation, situation that took place at work, then we have to talk about it. And we may talk about it at work with someone else. And then so now we have double loss of productivity. Or, you know, Susie may talk about it while at work but on the phone. So it may not be affecting someone in her organization in terms of their productivity. But, you know, whoever it is that she's talking to, you know, it's taking them away from, you know, their job and responsibility. So there, and yeah, and unfortunately, I think sometimes when we frame conflict, if we only frame it in terms of the emotional piece, then sometimes, you know, that can be discounted. But just as easy as you can put an emotional price tag on it, you can also put a productivity dollars lost price tag on it as well.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that people that we get people involved in our conflicts that A, really don't need to be, and B, can't really help us in resolving them. And yet as a result of this waterfall effect, we end up costing ourselves time, costing our employers or our very own businesses money, and then rolling that over into someone else's business or someone else's employer who loses out as we attempt to really bring people in, become part of our corner, but not really resolve the conflict at all. That is, it's something that we all do all the time, but I find it almost humorous how effortlessly we get other people involved in our stuff, and also how often and how easily they take it on themselves.
Well, yeah, and when you think about it from the perspective of, you know, that's a schoolyard 101 that, you know, in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, fifth grade, whatever it is, that if you and I have an issue, it just doesn't stop with the two of us, because now my friends who are on my side don't like you and your friends who are on your side. So now the battle line has been drawn. And that same type of mentality carries over into the workplace. And
right. It's
so costly and so unfortunate. And sometimes people don't even realize that they are being either A, being sucked into that vortex and asked to participate, or that they volunteer, you know. And one of the things that, you know, as what we do as a coach is, and what's so powerful about, you know, coaching and conflict is that coaches are trained as part of their certification process or their, you know, their educational process. Yes, to hear the details, to hear the story, but the difference that the coach brings to the table is that the coach doesn't get caught up in the story. that the coach is aware of the details, you know, so that, you know, the coach is clear on who the players are and what the situation is. But unlike a good friend, you know, or a mom or a dad or a relative or a spouse or significant other, you know, we don't jump on that, you know, bandwagon.
That's a very important immediate concern.
Mm-hmm. So we want to hear it, and we do hear it, and we need to hear it so that we can understand it, but we don't allow the client to stay in the story, because the solution, the growth, the development is not in the rehashing of the story, but rather, okay, so we have the story. Now, what are we going to do about it?
Right.
And that goes back to what you were saying in terms of those choices. So, you know, what choices do you have in terms of responding to this and kind of walking the client through that?
And I'm glad you brought in the coaching perspective early in our conversation. There are a lot of amateur coaches out there that don't know how to separate themselves from the outcome. And it's really important that for all those listening, that as you seek a coach, especially for conflict resolution, if you're seeking a coach, a consultant, someone like Ms. Wells, who can help you out and really resolve the conflict as opposed to stirring it up, or just allowing it to fester and, you know, taking a side and deciding who's right and who isn't. It's really important to understand the concept of not being associated with the overall outcome of a conflict. That's a beautiful thing to have a coach involved with. And it really focuses on, it allows us to focus on the issue and not so much on the emotions. It's you know, very important, I think, to bring that out very early in the process.
Right. And, you know, so our topic is, you know, conflict and various shades of that. So, you know, as you know, in the industry, coaching is deregulated, which means, you know, that any person at any time can hang out their shingle and, you know, start coaching. And, you know, so the idea is that, you know, I don't want to say the conflict amongst coaches, but one of the observations is that, one of the benefits, I'll put it that way, that a client receives when they work with a coach who has gone through a certified program is that that coach has been taught and practiced and has learned how to listen and even how to listen empathetically, but also, you know, like you said, not being wedded to the outcome or the result and learning how to hear the story without being emotionally engaged in the story and moving the client along in an attempt or, you know, with the intent or purpose of not stirring the pot and agitating, but moving the client along that, you know, that emotional continuum.
Right. This is a great discussion to have, especially in the midst of, you know, our lives and all that goes on, everything that we hear in the media. There's a lot of polarity. There's a lot of conflict on a day-to-day basis. And as more and more people absorb themselves into the discussion, it's very important to bring about some of the realities of the costs of conflict and also some of the ways to resolve them so that we can get back to a much more peaceful way of living. I want to invite our listeners in to call in. The guest call-in number is 646-716-9397. Feel free to give us a call. Join in the discussion. Tell us your concerns, issues, or even your remedies for resolving conflict. As I'm speaking on Lifelines with Wendell Buckner and my guest, Barry Wells. So, Barry, tell me a little bit about some of the process that you go through in resolving conflict in the workplace.
Well, I think oftentimes what I have found and observed is that, so in terms of a resolution or a way to kind of look at it is a lot of times you will find out, I have found that the issue is rooted in the fact that the expectation or the standard was not laid out up front.
Mm-hmm.
So if you and I are working together and I say to you, hey, can you get this PowerPoint together for me? I'm going to San Diego on Tuesday, and I need this put together, quote unquote. Now, what does put together mean? Does that mean copied? Does that mean bound? Does that mean loose leaf? Is that CBG bound with dividers? Is that no dividers? Is that front and back? Is that, you know, so it's all of those details that are not communicated, and then I've kind of left you to interpret what it is that I mean, and inevitably you're not going to give me what I want because you don't know. So when managers are complaining or dissatisfied about performance, you know, one of those preliminary conversations, you know, is, okay, so how did you make David aware of what the standard was? Oh, he should know. We're all professionals around here. Okay, well,
right.
Yeah, we are. Yes, we are all professionals, but we're professionals who have come from what? Different backgrounds and different experiences. And how was David supposed to know that, you know, pull this together meant front and back, color and bound? You know, what sample did you give him to work from? What checklist did you provide? So then that's where, you know, the trainer person then rises to the occasion, because then there are things that are called job aids that you provide to people, regardless to how professional or not you think that they are, but because, you know, instructions are subject to interpretation and we want to cut down on the interpretation. I need you to do this, you know, 3-ring binder with a color folder and not interpret it. I need you to kind of stick to the script. Well, in order for you to stick to the script, I need to give you the script.
Mm-hmm.
And when managers make assumptions about what people know or what they think they should know, or, ooh, that's common sense, you know, we are really just treading in murky waters.
Right. No, I definitely agree. I tell my clients when we're dealing with conflict, I talk about 3 different areas that I've learned, that I've been taught, and that communication piece that we brought up very early on is usually the root of conflict. You know, conflict generally comes from one of 3 origins, and it's all about expectations, as you said. Either unaccepted expectations, where someone said that, you know, here's how things should be and the other person didn't agree, or maybe it is unmet expectations, where someone says, here's what I want you to do. That person responds and says, absolutely, I'll do that. And then it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But the biggest one is really unexpressed expectations, where mm-hmm. people don't adequately communicate what the real expectation is. And as you've said, there's just so many ways to get it wrong and so few ways to get it right. And if that hasn't been communicated effectively, then sooner or later there's bound to be conflict. Even if it's not with the person who is, especially in the workplace, even if it's not with someone who has made a request of another, mm-hmm. there will end up being conflict by the person who was the executor of this action, because now they're going to feel that either they did more than they were supposed to, or they didn't do as much as they were supposed to, and now they've gotten away with something, or they did more than they were supposed to, and now they're expecting some return or some response that isn't going to come because of the way they went about meeting these expectations. So very, very,
absolutely,
very
absolutely.
Easy to miss.
Very easy to miss. And again, when we come to the table with our perceptions, our assumptions, well, you know, when I started out, you know, I knew that, or, you know, that good for you. But, you know, for the here and the now, you know, this is, and really you want to set people up for success. You know, so in terms of the conflict or the misunderstanding, you know, as the recipient of the template, the idea is when I receive the example, the sample, the framework, you know, to take that in the quote-unquote spirit that isn't that it is intended, which is, look, this is in no way a negative reflection on your ability to put together the notebook, but rather, I want you to understand how I would like for it to be done. And whether it be, you know, so from the perspective of the employee who's receiving the instruction, you know, how he or she takes the level of detail, that can also be a potential, you know, form of conflict. But when I'm working with clients in that situation, then, you know, the question is, well, could you make that, you know, could then the question can be, well, the level of details, what makes you think that it was contingent and specific only to you? You know, what if this is just that manager's style and approach and preference? You know, can, you know, does that then free you up to look at it in a different way? You know, and resisting the temptation to assume the worst about people. Oh, man, they did this because they think I'm not. You know, and when we go to that line of thinking, you know, we need to, as you know, challenge that assumption. You know, is it that? Is it that, you know, the boss is really saying that, you know, she thinks you're not something or less than something? Is that the only possible explanation? And then begin having those conversations about, well, what else could that mean?
Yeah, that's great advice. Avoiding the interpretations, avoiding the assumptions. And what you said earlier on in terms of solutions, getting the clarity. As people seek to gain clarity in understanding the root cause of their current conflicts, but also as they move forward in trying to avoid conflict, how would you suggest, or what role would you consider listening plays into both, into resolving conflict and into being the source of conflict?
Well, you know, there are different ways to listen. So what does that mean? So if I'm listening to a politician, or if I'm listening to someone in a sales situation, then I'm listening with a critical ear, as opposed to when I am listening to music, I am listening for enjoyment and relaxation and pleasure. So part of it is assessing the situation and knowing the way or the best way to listen based upon the situation. So if you are a colleague or coworker, or anyone who I care about, and you are distressed, then I'm not necessarily going to pull out my notebook and take notes and get it blow by blow, because at that point I'm listening from an empathic point of view versus a sales situation. I am going to have my notebook and notepad so that I can be clear and know kind of what the issue is. So even, you know, I love the question, but, you know, we think that all listening, you know, all listening is created equally, but it is not. So assuming that you are listening, you know, correctly or in the right way, and, oh, by the way, I do use an assessment that helps me to help my clients to identify their preferred way of listening, and then gives examples of, you know, each of the ones that I've just kind of talked about. So then in addition to the listening, you know, being open. And as your buttons are being pushed, however gently or however strongly or activated, you know, training yourself or relying on your training to remain open so that you can really hear what's being said, as opposed to just wanting the person to hurry up and be quiet so that you can say what you want to say.
Right. That's high school, boy.
Well,
especially
yes,
in the midst
wonderful.
Of trying to resolve conflict.
Yeah, so then that's another possible, you know, consideration that, you know, when knowing your internal signals and knowing how far you are or how close you are to, you know, the point where you are less reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as anger and intense feelings go, as they increase, our ability to think decreases and we move from thinking to reacting.
Then everything from a logical standpoint is thrown out the window and it's attack mode.
Yes. Yes. Then those instincts kick in. And yeah, granted, there are some instances where I need my instincts to kick in. You know, if I'm feeling danger, if I'm feeling unsafe, yeah, I need to run. As opposed to,
right.
you know, contemplating, studying, and, you know, is that dog really, you think the dog is going to get me? You know, well, if I'm feeling the dog is going to get me, I need to do what I need to do to kind of exit. So, you know, but back at work, not to say that those situations aren't so intense where you feel like, oh, I have to get out of here right now. But what we would, you know, ideally like to do is, you know, try to engage for as long as we can and then say, you know what? I need a break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want this to turn into more than it has to be. And, you know, taking a pause, you know, whether it be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half a day, 2 hours, or the next morning, but, you know, giving yourself an opportunity to kind of back off, regroup, think about it, and then come back. We don't, you know, have to resolve it. Sometimes we do, but, you know, if it's not that situation where we have to come to a conclusion right here and right now, then we can allow ourselves some breathing room.
And isn't it amazing at how hard that easy thing is to do, just to choose to take a break, take a time out?
Well, yes. Yeah. So when we when the pressure or I guess when the pressure or the thinking is to proceed forward, you know, taking a look at that. Well, was that real or was that imagined?
Right. Right.
You
Allow
know,
yourself that space to interpret and respond.
Right. You know, could I have taken 10 minutes? You know, oh, no, it had to be, you know, the client may say, oh, I can. Okay, so, well, why not? What would have prevented you from taking 10 minutes or what would have happened had you taken 10 minutes?
Right.
So sometimes what is prompting us to engage and continue is, you know, as our emotions are increasing, our thinking is decreasing. So the mouth is in full motion and the brain is, you know, just shut off. The amygdala is taking over and, you know, it's every man, every woman for him or herself. And you know, that too is a choice. But, you know, then after the fact, then we want to take a look at it. Well, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, how effective was that?
Right. And then we find ourselves back in this, you know, in this continuous loop as we're managing communication and seeking to both provide and understand, gain a level of clarity. So, you know, it starts to unravel itself even in the midst of, or can, even in the midst of seeking to resolve a conflict. You mentioned something that I wanted to talk a little bit more about. You mentioned openness. How much do you find the idea of openness and vulnerability as the issues related to workplace conflict?
You know, when you as soon as you said the word vulnerability, that's what I was thinking. You know, so I will say, I think there are a couple of answers to that. There's certainly the implication of gender, you know, in terms of to what extent do males at work allow themselves to be vulnerable as compared to women. And then there are generational considerations you know, there's the politics of it all. So there are a lot of factors that influence a person's vulnerability and to what extent. And even where you are, you new in the organization, or are you, have you been around? Are you a boss, a leadership, or, you know, frontline? So barring all of those, I think the idea, you know, is how do you, and in coaching, you know, we pose the question, so, well, how do you want to show up in this scenario?
Mm-hmm.
And based upon how you want to show up, then that will influence all of those details.
That's major.
Yeah, and even if I'm in a situation where I'm feeling, you know, wow, this workplace is not safe for me, that this is a war zone, that does not mean that I cannot express with my vocabulary how I am feeling or what I don't like. You know, I can say, you know, when we're in the staff meeting and it's my turn to speak and you, you know, cut me off and jump ahead of me, that frustrates me. So there is a way to learn, you know, like when we talk to our children when they're young, we say, ah, use your words. So, you know, same thing. So to the extent that I feel comfortable enough to use my words to express myself, and I'm talking about how I feel about it and the impact of it, well, that's me being vulnerable, but in my assessment, that's an appropriate amount of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
Now, not that, you know, I mean, I'm so upset that I'm crying and the conflict is so great, you know, male or female, but, you know, barring that, I can use my words and use my vocabulary and talk about the impact of what that does to me so that you get the so what. Because I think a lot of times when there's a misunderstanding that the perpetrator doesn't understand the impact of his or her behavior. So when I give
right.
you that so what piece, that's intended for you to see, oh, wow, okay. It does mean something when I do X, Y, or Z.
I'm glad you bring that up. The Center for Creative Leadership is a think tank in Greensboro, but they're internationally known. One of the components that they've created as it relates to feedback is what they market as their SBI model, which is exactly what you just stated. It is bringing
situation.
About an understanding to an individual of the situation, the behavior, and
the
impact.
Impact.
So. Yep. So it's, you know, you did this and I felt this.
Right. And what I like to remind my clients and participants is that impact piece, it's critical that you, meaning the recipient of the behavior or the observer, that you have an impact statement. And that moves you from, you know, just kind of bringing something to my attention or, you know, blowing off steam to let's get down to the heart of the matter. And even if the impact doesn't affect me personally, you know, but if there is an impact to others or an impact to our organization or to our clients, or to our family, or to our neighborhood, you know, the impact is just as legitimate. But when we are excited and, you know, maybe a little revved up, that impact piece may not come to us so quickly, but it is certainly worth thinking about and considering prior to, so that when we're having the conversation, that SBI model, that we can include that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very, very good subject to talk about, conflict resolution. Once again, I am on with Lifelines with Wendell Buckner and my guest, Barry Wells. We are talking about How to Coach on Conflict. The phone number, if you'd like to join us in conversation, is 646-716-9397. Let me very briefly reintroduce our sponsor for the show, which is Audible. Audible is a Amazon technology that utilizes audio books and periodicals. If you're ever interested in learning more about yourself through self-help, or if you just want to hear a good book, choose Audible. They have different packages that are available for you and are available to you. I've been a user of Audible since 2012 and have had significant impact in my personal and professional growth using their system. I strongly recommend it, and they're our sponsor for today. Once again, 646-716-9397 if you're interested in joining us in our conversation. Tell me a little bit about accountability as it relates to conflict resolution. How does that play itself out in the workplace?
Well, that's a big one. So a part of that, you know, conflict resolution piece is the ownership piece. And I think this is kind of where things get a little interesting as well as revealing.
Yeah.
So
who wants to own the problem, right?
Who wants to own the problem? And I disown the problem in a number of ways. So if I come to you and I say, well, you know, I didn't really mean to, or if you were offended by that, if I've offended you in any way, in my mind, those are all code words for, oh, you're not being accountable.
You just brought up a great piece of the puzzle. Not owning the problem, but disowning the problem. That is very accurately stated. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. And so what's so interesting about that is when I come to you and I say it, you know, there's no if about it. You know, I've communicated my displeasure or the inconvenience it caused me or whatever it is. Or even on your own accord, you know, if you're kind of thinking about it and you want to circle back and say, hey, you know, well, if this, then that's you, me, us being less accountable.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, we're going back to that vulnerability piece, you know, wow, you know, it had not occurred to me that that was problematic.
Right. So there's sometimes it's just straight up denial and people just decide that, oh, that must be your problem, or I'm sorry you feel that way. But like you said, disowning the problem, that's very important.
Yeah, and I think that when we do that, then in my observation and in my experience, that does not mend that fence. You know, because at that point, if I'm the party who is saying, you know, the issue for me, you know, it's not about you. And, well, in your opinion, and it doesn't bother you when I bring the car home with a quarter of a tank and we only have one car. Well, but for me, it's problematic because I tend to, you know, leave home in the morning at the last minute. And when I don't know that the car only has a quarter tank of gas and I have to stop, that extra 6 minutes could make or break, you know, my commute. So could we have an agreement that'll say, you know, we will bring the car home with half a tank of gas? So no matter where I have to go or no matter where you have to go, you know, all things being equal, a half a tank can kind of at least get us there. As opposed to, well, gee, it doesn't bother me when you bring it, when I get the car and it's a quarter tank. You know what I mean? So those things don't help us get to a resolution or an agreement.
That's an example of not listening with an empathetic ear.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Because remember, it's not about, you know, oh, well, that doesn't bother me. Or, you know, what's so troublesome about that? You know, and we're questioning why the person feels the way that they do. As opposed to, Well, you know, wow, that hasn't been my experience, but, you know, okay, so it's troubling to you, it bothers you, it's, you know, unnerving to you. Then here comes my choice. Well, what, if anything, do I choose to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all along, and when you opened the call, you know, we were talking about those choices. So,
right.
You know, at least when we bring the issue, the behavior, the SBI model, when I bring, you know, the behavior to the person's attention, I'm giving person a choice. And the choice is, what, if anything, will they do with that information I just shared?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the answer is they do a whole lot with it. And sometimes the answer is they do nothing at all. But, you know, I, from a conflict resolution perspective, you know, I have done my part to make you aware. And now you have the choice to do something or nothing about what I've said to you.
Right. And in the case of conflict resolution, I always believe that, you know, that inaction is, you know, is as forceful as any other action. You know, choosing to not acknowledge a conflict or to not seek a resolution to it, that's, you know, that's very telling behavior.
Absolutely. Well, because to make the choice not to act is just that, a choice. And with every choice, there are consequences. And some of the consequences we like and enjoy and appreciate, and then in others, we do not.
Mm-hmm. Another subject for you. Inevitably, especially in the workplace, but outside of the workplace, just in our general relationships, we do not want to... Businesses do not want to allow an aggressor to have the upper hand. In relationships, we don't want to, we very seldom want to be perceived as the pushover or as the minority, as the small one in a relationship. How then do we get to a level of, or an aspect of forgiveness as it relates to conflict? Is there forgiveness of conflict in the workplace, or is this does something have to happen?
Well, no, that's a fabulous question. And as it relates to forgiveness, well, first of all, I think that your view and your philosophy about forgiveness have a lot to do with what I would call your orientation or your conviction or your belief system. So from my belief system, and I'm a Christian.
Just elaborate on that. So you're saying the concept of forgiveness for an individual.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And then so then
okay.
Individuals then make up families, and families make up neighborhoods, and neighborhoods make up communities, and communities make up cities and counties and regions and states.
Right. I think I know where you're going, but I want to make sure that our listeners really get this piece.
So because there are certain philosophies, beliefs, viewpoints that say an eye for an eye. So, you know, you get me. Guess what, buddy? I'm going to get you. And not only am I going to get you, but I'm going to get you, and I'm going to get you at a greater, I'm going to get you more than you got me.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is your orientation or belief, then forgiveness does not play a part in how you view the scenario. So on the other end of the spectrum is, not only am I going to forgive you, but I am going to forgive you in the absence of you asking for forgiveness, acting like you are sorry or in some way remorseful, or giving me any indication that you see, you know, an error in your way. huge, huge, you know, spectrum of 180 degrees. So individually, you know, as it relates to conflict, we have to determine what that looks like for us in whatever the scenario is. And I think sometimes, you know, when we look at forgiveness and what that looks like real time, that doesn't mean allow people to mistreat you. That doesn't mean allow people to steal credit for your work. That doesn't mean let people take advantage of you. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that when you have been wronged, that you release the person in your mind and in your heart that they owe you something, that they owe you something for that transgression.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not looking for them to repay you or restore you or to, you know, put you back in your original position. You release them from that debt. Now, that also, at least to me, that also means that I want to be mindful and not put myself, you know, in those situations where a debt can be exacted. But while doing that, you know, I do it with an attitude and a disposition where, you know, I'm maybe not Julie Andrews' Sound of Music, but, you know, I'm pleasant. So, the, you know, the whole idea of the conflict, you know, and a part of the conflict resolution, here's the other part, I think, is, well, what was my part? You know, what was my contribution to the situation? You know, what will I do differently the next time I'm in that scenario? Because resolving the conflict is not always contingent upon what the other guy or what the other girl, the change that they're going to make, but it's also has something to do with the change that I am going to make.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know, I have a rule that says I'm not going to lend more than $100 at any one time. Or the rule that says, nope, you don't get to wear, you know, my favorite pair of shoes because the last time you did, you returned them to me and, you know, they were shot. I had to take them to the repair, mm-hmm. whatever it is. So a part of that resolving the conflict is also moving from, you know, the person, the victim, you know, to, in that interaction, what choices did I make?
Yep. What choices and did I make?
And if I don't like the outcome, mm-hmm. what can I do differently the next time?
Yeah, that's great to bring forward. You know, we have the ability and the choice always to forgive. And we can forgive and even forget the occurrence in terms of, as you were saying, not seeking any future retribution or retaliation. But
right.
But conflict should always afford us the ability to have a greater level of discernment and a greater level of understanding, because that's just common sense. And being able to acknowledge and respond to what has just occurred to us or with between us.
But here, only if your mindset is not one of, wow, they did me wrong.
Right. I say common sense, huh? Is that what I said?
Mm-hmm. Because if my thinking is how wrong you did me, how awful you are, and it's all about you, then at no point do I bear any responsibility on looking at my part and figuring out, even to the slightest degree, what I might do differently. So if it's all about, you know, you done me wrong, and I'm the victim and I am powerless and there was nothing else for me to do, then the likelihood is great that I'm going to repeat that behavior because in my mind, I was done wrong. Well, yeah, I was done wrong, but guess what? These are the two things next go around that I will not do so that I will not find myself in that situation again. So we
and think about the harmful cycle people get into when they don't, when they're not able to look back and create a new perspective out of conflict that they are that they're in.
Well, then we have the cycle, and then we have the repetition, and then, you know, we have justification of, well, you know, I'm going to show this guy, and I'm going to take matters into my own hands. Then we have escalation.
Right. We have escalation, and now we're at a much worse place in a much shorter period of time. Just
absolutely.
By not having learned these life lessons.
Yeah. And maybe the life lesson is, wow, you know, I am going to eat my lunch at another cafeteria altogether.
Right.
I just, you know, and sometimes it might mean removing yourself from that situation. Now, granted, that is not always possible, and maybe it's not always possible right away. But, you know, sometimes that may be the solution, you know. I'm going to have to disengage. I'm going to have to separate. I'm going to have to, you know, like I said, have my lunch on another park bench.
Right. It's okay when you decide that you need to take your ball and go home.
Yeah, sometimes you need to do that.
That's fine. Yep.
Sometimes you need to do that. And one of the things that you and I had talked about was my upcoming book, that addresses some of those workplace, you know, scenarios. And sometimes the answer is exit stage right.
Right. We've got 8 minutes left on the show, give or take, if we have some final statements that we want to make. But in the time that we have left, would you please tell us some more about your upcoming book, 31 Indicators That the Great Job You Just Landed Isn't Going to Last As Long as You Think.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
That's a mouthful. I took a look at, 31 Indicators. I am, how will I describe myself when it comes to literature? I like things that are short and sweet and pithy. So I looked at 31 as like one a day in terms of a calendar. And 31 instances, 31 scenarios, and what I want to do is lay it out in two or three short paragraphs and then have a perspective, well, for the manager. So manager person, if you were doing this, what's the implication? What's the impact? So if you're the perpetrator of this act or behavior, you know, from a managerial perspective, what does that mean? From the recipient, you know, we've been talking a lot this hour about choices. So recipient of said behavior, what choices do you have and what are some potential impacts? So it's really intended to take a look at different types of behaviors that people are subjected to in the workplace and the impacts of that in terms of the direct recipient, those who are also observing, and what are some alternatives? What are some ways that, you know, you can approach that differently? So instead of, I don't know, so one of the stories is No Training for You, Cinderella. And I like that because, you know, Cinderella just was, boy, she got the short end of the stick from her stepmom and her stepsisters. So, you know, when, as a manager, you're treating people differently and you're not hiding it and you're blatant about it, so what's the impact of that? And granted, we are in an economy or a situation in some professions where, you know, it's the employer's market, but while they are in your employ, what's the impact and what's the cost? And when you find yourself doling out privileges and benefits in a way that is not fair and it's not balanced, let's take a closer look at that. So it's intended to build awareness for both the perpetrator and also the recipient, you know, because I'm big on not blaming the victim, but empowering the victim, the recipient, with tools that, you know, are just that, empowering. Uh-oh, did I lose you?
No, I'm just talking with my phone on mute, that's all. Yeah, I was just saying, there's a major need for the level of clarity that you bring to the situation for lots and lots of businesses. I think that, I know that there is an area of the corporate world that spends a significant amount of money in resolving or bringing awareness to some of the internal conflicts that they have. And even worse, those that won't bring a level of awareness to it have to try to conduct business in spite of it. So there's certainly a need for an understanding of how to resolve conflict, and even at the heart of it, how to minimize conflict. I don't believe that conflict can overall be avoided, but certainly there are small things that we can do to minimize it.
Well, and you make an excellent point, and the idea is also is that, wow, well, what's a potential benefit that we can gain from conflict when it's resolved well? You know, when mm-hmm. we, you know, so again, going back from a faith perspective, you know, for Christians, this is our holy, high holy season, you know, as we are approaching Easter. And when I think about Christ himself and, you know, Joseph. So, yeah, Joseph really, boy, he went through it. So, but on the other side of that, ill treatment, kidnapping, you know, thrown in jail, forgotten about. Well, God, and those are really harsh, hard circumstances, but what did he gain from that?
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of that. So, you know, and again, going back to our role as coaches, to remind our clients that, you know, what's potentially on the other side of this for you?
Right.
That, and how might you use this situation to your benefit, to your betterment?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know? I mean, there are lots of businesses that have grown in the secular world from how they resolve conflict. You know, Southwest is one that comes to mind immediately. They are low cost, but they are high touch. They know that they're going to have problems. They know that there are going to be issues that come up just as they run their business. And they make no bones about it. Tell their client is that we will make it right and that you will be
yeah.
well served. That makes
yeah.
a major difference when you're dealing with business.
Absolutely.
If you look at Chick-fil-A,
and I love that language. Know, we will make it right. That goes back to what we talked
right.
about earlier. That accountability, make it right.
Yep.
You know, if
right,
if,
right,
if you,
right.
Yeah. If you've harmed someone or they suffered in some kind of way, make it right instead of making what excuses and
right.
justifications and rationalizations. Make it right. So if that's, you know, mom and dad at home, if that, you know, is condo owner to, you know, condo board, if that is association member, wherever, you know, make it right. You know, but
mm-hmm.
there are so many things that interfere with our ability and our willingness to make it right. And even if I'm working for a large organization and I personally cannot, you know, write the check, just in terms of how I speak to the person and my tone of voice, all of those things can convey, you know, I'm sorry this happened to you, you know, this is so unfortunate, and I apologize.
Right, yeah. Apologizing sincerely, having a forgiving heart, you know, giving a little grace and mercy, just simply communicating or even taking accountability for your actions or for anyone's actions. Some people are not even looking to have their conflict actively resolved, but really just looking for someone to understand why this might be an issue or is an issue for them. A listening ear can resolve a lot of conflict.
Absolutely. Versus, well, I don't see what the problem is. Well, what's wrong with that? You know, can't you just work around it? And again, you know, that negates, you know, the recipient's experience, feeling, perspective, and who of any of us has the right to do that?
Exactly. Listeners, choose to not be a victim. Find ways to avoid, minimize, or at the very least, expose and talk about conflict that you have. Take responsibility for your own actions. Share the forgiveness that you've been granted and forgive others. Develop a level of concern and compassion for others. Reconcile your differences to bring about a level of peace into your life so that you can experience joy like no one else. This has been Lifelines with Wendell Buckner and my guest, Barry Wells. Barry, tell us one more time about your book and about how people can get in touch with you in the future.
Well, thank you again. So in terms of the book, it is due to be released this fall, and it is, again, entitled 31 Indicators That the Great Job You Just Landed is Not Going to Last as Long as You Think. Those who are interested can certainly follow up with me via email, and my email address is Barry Wells, B-E-R-R-I, Wells, at Turning Point Solutions, with an S, .net, and I will certainly keep you abreast of when and where it will be available, but I'm looking forward to it, and I think it is going to be the beginning of what I hope will be some dynamic conversations, and again, not in the spirit of the victim and not in the spirit of blaming, but in, you know, just recognizing, oh, this is what this is, yes, and then these are some options or some steps that you can take in terms of responding to it in a way that is constructive as opposed to destructive.
Well, thank you very much for being on with us. I'm looking forward to the book as well. My name is Wendell Buckner. I am the CEO and founder of Lace for Life Coaching and Consulting here in the D.C. area and, of course, worldwide through the Internet, thank goodness. I can be reached at wcbuckner@laceforlife.com, LaceForLife.com, or you can reach me at CEO@laceforlife.com. Once again, this has been Lifelines with Wendell Buckner and my guest, Barry Wells, coaching on conflict. Thank you, and have a great, great evening, a great week. Bye-bye.